The Gospel of Luke, chapter chapter 8, verse number 22. One day Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." Church, we continue to move through the Gospel of Luke. If you haven't noticed, there is a lot of moving. We have been moving story to story, place to place. We are on a journey toward the embrace of the gospel story of Jesus and later on the gospel story of the church. And just as the scenery changes with the seasons, we see seasons changing in the gospel. We observe scenes changing like the seasons we experience in the weather. We see the calmness of a quiet spring day. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping, the leaves are forming, and the roses begin to bloom. Yet also in the spring, there are the gray skies and the storms. The weatherman comes on the television and shares the Doppler radar forecast. Storms are coming. The sail is moving quickly over the central Ohio area that will bring torrential rainfall, boisterous thunder, and mesmerizing lightning. And these storms are often the fuel for fears. We're glued to our televisions, and we may even start planning our retreat to the lower levels of our homes for safety. Church, there are definite parallels in our lives. Because we too experience seasons of calmness, but then we experience also seasons of storms in our lives. There's chaos, there's busyness, there's cancer. Just got a phone call this past week that my sister's husband just found out that his dad has inoperable lung cancer. It's nothing they can do. He's 84 years old. I share with some of you on Wednesday that one of my best friends growing up in my neighborhood was in the hospital with kidney failure, and just learned yesterday afternoon that my friend Terrence passed away, 42 years old. There are the storms of dysfunction. We have families and we have family problems, and we have marriages and we have marriage problems, and we have children and our children have behavioral problems. Yes, we experience storms. Maybe we are like the apostles in the boat. Why were they in a boat? Well, Jesus said, let's go over to the other side of the lake. Maybe Jesus needed to get away and retreat from the crowds. This wasn't unprecedented. He was repeatedly needing time away. Perhaps it was to travel to uncharted area. While in the boat and crossing the lake, a storm came. It rocked the boat. In this text, we see Jesus and his disciples in a boat. These disciples knew Jesus better than anyone else. They observed Jesus' miraculous power up close and personal. They knew he could cast out demons. They saw him raise a dead person to life. They knew he could do anything. So why were they afraid of a storm. Why did they think that the Messiah and giver of life would let them drown and die? Master, get up. We're all going to die. What an interesting detail in the story that while these disciples panicked, Jesus was taking a nap. Jesus woke up and spoke to the storm. Jesus rebuked the storm, and then he rebuked his disciples. He said to them, "Where is your faith?" Now, the disciples didn't answer him back directly. Instead, they spoke to each other, asking, "Who is this who commands the waters, the winds, and they obey him?" What? Who is this? If anyone should know the answer to the question, it would be those who were asking it. Why did these intimate companions of Jesus doubt Jesus' power? Didn't they know who was in the boat with them? Didn't they know that the master of the sea was on board? Didn't they know that the storm wasn't in control, but Jesus was in control? And before we go off on these seemingly clueless apostles, when we're in the midst of storms, why do we fear? Why are we prone to doubt? Haven't we seen the wonders of God before? What makes us think that we are doomed when we experience storms? It was in that eye of the storm that Jesus proved something to his apostles. He spoke to the storm, and it was by that act that made a blatant declaration that when it comes to storms or any other power in this world, that God has the power. And what effect did this miraculous display have on the apostles? They were bewildered. And they asked the question, "Who is this?" Does this strike anyone as an odd question? These apostles have been traveling with Jesus for, again, quite some time now. They know him most intimately. They have watched him heal the sick and raise the dead. Didn't they know by now who Jesus was? Now, what unfolds next after this immediate scene in the storm is a series of narratives that seems to seek to give the apostles the answer to their question. I mean, Jesus could have spent time in that boat and sat down as he's been doing all along and just taught them and just declared to them quite easily, you know, this is who I am. But we see the beauty of storytelling. We see the beauty of narrative. We see how this story seeks to answer these apostles' question in the midst of their bewilderment. In the first story, we encounter another story of Jesus healing someone who was demonically possessed. Luke chapter 8, verse number 26, it says, "They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in the house, but had lived in tombs. But when he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, 'What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me.' For Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man many times. It had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places." Remember, in the boat, the apostle asked the question, "Who is this?" In this story of a demon-possessed man, who answers that question? It was the demons. They acknowledged Jesus as the Son of the Most High God immediately when confronted by Jesus. And Jesus cast the demons into a herd of pigs. A lot of commentators remark that the fact that there was a herd of pigs there is to suggest that this was probably a non-Jewish area, that this was probably a Gentile area, and this was probably one of the first times that Jesus is literally in Gentile area, and so he's not just ministering to Jews, but he's ministering to Gentiles. It also means that when these demons are sent to a herd of pigs, and in the rest of the story we see that these pigs run into the lake and they're drowned and they're killed, that those who were in charge of the herd were probably a little upset, because Jesus meant bad news for business. We're going to see a parallel story of what it means when the gospel comes into contact with folks who are engaged in evil behavior. Because when we get to the book of Acts, we'll go to a city called Ephesus, and we'll see in Ephesus a group of people who believed in God, and they confessed that Jesus was their Lord. They were baptized into Jesus Christ, and they begin to give up some things. They begin to give up their idolatry. And there were some people in the town there, and we'll read this in Acts 19. There's some people in the book of Acts, some business owners that were upset. They said, this dude, Paul, he's bad for business. You see, we can't make idols anymore. We can't sell idols to people who don't worship idols. One of the realities that we need to understand and embrace is that when Jesus comes into the hearts of people, when Jesus comes into the neighborhood, it might mean bad news for business. When we begin to preach Jesus, when we begin to talk about Jesus changing lives and about Jesus being an alternative to other lifestyles, to drug addiction, to sexual addiction, to whatever it is that grabs people, when we begin to preach Jesus, it's going to be bad news for business. I met a guy this week who's with a worldwide ministry called Crossfire Ministries, and he and his family are about to move to El Salvador. In Central America, and they're moving to a region that is heavily controlled by drug cartels, and the government there is controlled by drug cartels, and they're a little nervous, but they're faithful, and they're praying to God that God will bless their ministry there. But they're going there to change hearts, and guess what, church? When they begin to change hearts in El Salvador, it's going to mean bad news for business. For those drug cartels, Jesus has power over evil. And church, we need to understand that, you know, right now in Central Ohio, and I think the Attorney General just mentioned this in a recent speech, the heroin epidemic is off the chain, church. Off the chain means it's bad. Right now as we speak, there are kids as young as middle school age starting to experiment with heroin. We've got to do something in the name of Jesus. Amen. We've got to mean bad news for business in Central Ohio in the name of Jesus. Now, this man who was now freed went to tell people what Jesus had done for him, and the result was like other instances of Jesus healing. Crowds began to gather to hear him and perhaps to be touched by him. Let's read the next story and jumping down to Acts or Luke chapter 8, starting at verse number 40. Luke chapter 8, starting at verse number 40, it says, "Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. 'Who touched me?' Jesus said. When they all denied it, Peter said, 'Master, the people are crowding in and pressing against you.' But Jesus said, 'No, someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me.' Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace.' Now, while Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. Your daughter is dead. He said, don't bother the teacher anymore. Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed. When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. Stop wailing, Jesus said. She is not dead, but asleep. They laughed at him, knowing that that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, my child, get up. And her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened. Third story takes place as Jesus prepares to help someone in the fourth story. A synagogue ruler named Jairus comes to Jesus. He had a dying daughter and sought the help of the master and great physician. I think it's important to see that this was a religious leader. I think that throughout the preaching of the Gospel of Luke, religious leaders often get a bad rap. But here we see that Jesus didn't limit all of his help to the poor and the unreligious, but the non-religious, but also to those who had positions of authority and leadership. The compassionate Jesus agreed to go, and on his way he was interrupted. A large crowd followed and pressed him, and that was common because he was a popular guy. But in this crowd stood out a woman of great distress, a woman with an issue of blood or a bleeding problem, a hemorrhaging problem. She had it for 12 long years. She had been to doctors and she had been to experts, and no one could determine a cure for this woman. She wanted freedom from this distress of this sickness. She was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Hearing that this great physician was passing by, she was determined that all she had to do was just touch. Now, by touching someone and you had a bleeding problem, that was going against, that was a clear violation of the Mosaic law, that if you had a bleeding problem, you couldn't touch other people. But she defied that in order to touch this great physician. And she was determined that all she had to do was just touch a piece. Touch a piece of his clothing, and she would be healed. And her faith paid off. She was healed, and the text says, freed from her suffering. Jesus, perceiving power had left him, demanded an explanation. He wanted to know who touched him. The woman fessed up. She couldn't contain herself. She fell at Jesus' feet and told the truth. And Jesus remarked about her, your faith has made you well. Be free. Remember Jairus' daughter, though? What if you were Jairus who had just come to Jesus and said, hey, could you come heal my daughter? And it's not that he wasn't happy about this woman who was healed, but I get the feeling that Jairus is kind of like, hey, Jesus, we've got to go. We need to get you to the house. My daughter is at a point of death. Sure enough, messengers show up and tell Jairus that his daughter died. I can't even imagine being told that. Jairus tells him, "Don't bother Jesus anymore." But Jesus ignored that and told the ruler, just believe and don't be afraid. And Jesus goes to the house and he takes his inner circle, Peter, James, and John, and the girl's parents. And Jesus defiles the Mosaic law by touching a corpse. But he touches her and tells her to wake up. This 12-year-old is raised to life. And even in the face of all the doubt, Jesus still healed. Church, remember where we began this morning. We began in the first episode or narrative or story in a storm that led to the disciples asking a question, who is this guy? And in the second story, the answer is given by an unlikely source, demons, who said, this is the Son of the Most High God. In the third episode, we see what faith is. It's not just belief, because the demons believed. It's not just belief, but it's demonstrating that belief in activity based on the belief that you have, like this woman who believed so much in this great physician that all she had to do was just reach out to Jesus and she would be healed. And in the fourth story, Jesus displayed what his power and activity cannot and will not be hindered by, and that's doubt. The daughter was raised to life even when the people thought it was too late. Right before us, church, we have four tightly knit narratives that seem to address the question, who is this? The question and the answer flow from the apostles' struggle in coming to grips with the true identity of Jesus. And through these narratives, we, as the readers, are provided deep revelation regarding the identity of Christ. You see, Jesus has power. He has the power over nature. He has the power to remain calm and to bring calm into our stormy situations. The disciples were astonished, and even though they had been traveling with him and Jesus had explained to them the secrets of the kingdom, they still had problems believing who he was. You see, Jesus has power. He had the power over evil. He had the power to eradicate the powerful forces of evil. He can do the same for us. He has done the same for us by freeing us from the hold that Satan has had over us. Hopefully, we, like the man who was healed from that demonic possession, hopefully we, like him, are proclaiming and testifying and showing the light that we now have after living in such darkness. We are no longer prisoners chained up, but we are living in freedom, and that freedom is in Christ. Jesus Christ has power over sickness. As this woman would testify, Jesus had power to heal the most serious of sicknesses. And don't underestimate the role of faith. You might have a sickness, but that sickness does not have to have you. And Jesus had power over death. Not only did Jesus defy death here and in previous episodes, later on he would prove to be victorious over death when he was resurrected from his own tomb. Church, if you don't know him by now, let me introduce you to Jesus, who has the power to calm your storms. What storms do you have? What peace do you need? Is it at work? Is it at home? Is it at church? If you don't know him by now, let me introduce you to Jesus, who has the power to free you from evil. What evil are you experiencing? Pornography? Lying? Adultery? Hate? Church, if you don't know him by now, let me introduce you to Jesus, who has the power to heal. Put your faith in him and reach out to Jesus. And healing as defined by God will come to you. If you don't know him by now, I know some of you smart Alex are going, you will never, never, never know me. If you don't know him by now, let me introduce you to Jesus, who has the power to raise from the dead what you think is dead and unable to be resurrected. Because some of you think your marriages are dead and it's just beyond repair, it cannot be resurrected. Some of you live the single life and perhaps you think that that's a dead existence, or some of you are still looking for purpose in life and you're like, you know, it's just done. I'm past that middle age time. There's nothing else for me to do. That's dead. Maybe your prayer life is dead. Maybe your church life is dead. Let me introduce you to Jesus, who has the power to touch and to resurrect from the dead what we think cannot be resurrected. Whether you are in the middle of a storm or captivated by evil or discouraged by sickness or even the reality of death, the claim of Jesus is that not only does he have the power over all of those, but he will walk lovingly by our sides through all of it. You see, over and over again throughout these episodes, did you hear and notice Jesus saying, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Jesus, why? Why not be afraid? Because I'm here. And I got this. I've got the power. Jesus has the power over nature, evil, sickness, and death. And that is to say, he has the power over all, and he is ready to receive you and your faith in him. He wants and desires our faith and belief in him. Do we have faith in his promises to work on our behalf? Will we believe that he does possess power over nature, evil, sickness, death? Church, I pray that we would possess such faith, even amongst our fears and our doubts and our disappointments. But don't just believe. Act on that belief. Confess this belief. Testify about this belief. Live out this belief. Worship with this belief. Give with that belief. Love with this belief. And pray with that belief. You know, I mentioned my friend earlier that passed away yesterday. And I grew up on the street. It was, you know, several of us, but we were kind of his brother, this guy, Terrence, Derek. You might recall in the sermon, I told a story about a guy who we went behind our house and lit a big pile of leaves on fire, and he ran. Well, that was Terrence, okay? So Terrence and his brother Derek and myself, we were kind of like the three amigos. We just did everything together. And as far as they knew, they only had, you know, each other. Well, come to find out later on in life, Terrence actually had a whole additional family that included several brothers and sisters that he never knew about. And it was only after they became adults that they had got in touch with each other and connected. You know, one of the blessings that I was able to just witness during this ordeal was one of the brothers that I actually went to high school with. So I went to high school with two guys. I was friends with both of them and didn't know that they were brothers. They connected. And the guy who was on Facebook asking his friends to pray for his brother was this guy that previously didn't even know he had a brother. And it was interesting to see the collection of statements and collection of people offering support to this guy in faith, even in the midst of a storm, even in the midst of sickness, even in the midst of death. And it's so amazing how God shows up and is there for any situation. One of the struggles that we have in church, and one of the struggles that we have in trying to bring people to Christ, is that there are a lot of people who aren't in the church, who don't have a faith, who struggle with a Jesus who they feel or deem is just not relevant to their lives. The only way that people are going to see that Jesus is relevant or can be relevant in their lives is if we understand that he's relevant in our lives. And so I think the struggle that Jesus had with his apostles in that boat was, if anyone should know who I really am, it should be you guys. It was kind of a humiliating experience to then go to a demon-possessed guy who sees and experiences the power of God, and he goes and tells everybody. And then we get a woman who has a ceremonially unclean disposition who reaches out to Jesus, and that becomes the example of faith. Church, if we're going to preach that Jesus Christ is relevant to the world, we've got to believe that he's relevant to our own lives. Does that make any sense? And when we begin to understand how relevant he is in our lives, it's not for us to keep to ourselves or keep in our journals. Church, we've got to talk to each other. We've got to share these stories of faith. We've got to share these stories of God's deliverance. We've got to share these stories of how God is resurrecting things that we thought was dead. We have to share these instances that God made a way when there wasn't another way. We need to share these instances when we were outside of our minds going crazy in these storms, and Jesus said, "Be still. I got this. I've got the power." Listen, God is mighty to save. He's mighty to save you from your situation, mighty to calm your storm, mighty to be with you and journey with you in sickness. You may be healed in your sickness. You may die in your sickness, but God is there. And that's a promise that's a blessing. As we sing this next song, if there's something that the church can pray for you, if there's something that you need the church to walk side by side with you in, maybe right now you're in a storm and you're going crazy and you just need someone to hold your hand and just say, "Be still. God has the power." Maybe you're suffering with sickness. Maybe you're suffering with physical sickness. Maybe you're suffering with physical sickness or mental sickness. Maybe you're suffering from spiritual sickness. We want to grab your hand and say, "Be still, because God has the power." Maybe you are suffering because you are so captivated by some sort of evil behavior. Some sin has just got a hold over you and you want free from that. We want you to respond to this Jesus. We'll hold your hand and say, "Be still, because God has the power over evil." And maybe there's a situation right now that you're experiencing that you said, "It's done, it's dead, there is no more hope." We want to grab your hand and say, "Listen, God has the power over death. Be still. He's got this." If we can minister to you in any way, this is church, this is visitors, this is your first time here, this is your 800th time here. If there's a way that we can embrace you with the love of God and the power of Jesus, please come as we stand and sing this song.